because Gertrude Tendritz took a device invented by a man, sold it in a way that only a woman could. She hired female salespeople, female production people, asked female nurses to speak about the product to people. Because here is the gospel truth of sales. No one can sell a product quite like the people who love it. Welcome back to Privy. Privy is a podcast about bathrooms, recorded from my home bathroom. I'm your host, Hunter Hoover, and I love bathrooms. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for being here with us. At moments when I get quiet on the show today, you might be able to hear the absolute winter monsoon that is happening here in the Willamette Valley, Oregon. Just on the other side of my bathroom wall here is the outside of doors. And there is a rain gutter that runs along the edge of my home in the back corner back here. And it just sounds like an absolute gushing stream of it sounds like when I have what I like to call a thirsty day, when I have a big thirst and I drink way too much water, and then that first just big release. It really just sounds like that, but it has been sounding like that. I was listening to it as I was setting up for this record, and I'm thinking that's definitely going to be audible in the background. So the keen and attuned ear might hear the occasional sound of rushing water. Fear not, I am not relieving myself mid-record. It is just the Willamette Valley rains. But I'm glad that you're here with us. And this week's episode is going to be a little bit out of my wheelhouse. I must admit, most things when it comes to most things bathroom, I'm pretty well experienced. Like, not to toot my own horn, not to rip my own beaver here, but I really am pretty experienced in bathroom things. Like, I've been there, pooped in that. You know what I'm saying? And so this week, I must admit, I did a lot of learning this week. Sometimes my bathroom education comes firsthand. This week, it was not firsthand. If I tried to make this week's bathrooming firsthand, it would be a mess, and it would be highly uncomfortable. But I want to be the first again to acknowledge here that as a guy, there is truly a whole aspect of the bathroom experience that is lost on me. For me, bathrooming is isolated to primarily the yellow stream, the big brown logs, or in my case, the brown stream, because often I am a semi-liquid situation, and God forbid, the occasional up chunk. Now, I'm a guy. Male, howdy, it's me, your local male. I don't know, you know, if this is your first time listening to Privy, first of all, I want to apologize up front. Second, there's some potty humor involved in this podcast about bathrooms, I must admit. And if you didn't put two and two together, guy in his 30s has a podcast and it's about bathrooms, and you weren't able to suss that out, that's going to be a guy making that, like a man person making that show. Now you know. And while from what I can tell, being a guy also means that I'm more prone to sharing with you the things that I do in the bathroom. And when the stink is a big gnarls Barkley stink, there usually is like a courtesy sniff involved. Like, if there's something stanky, you just got to get up on it. I've also begun making a habit of using the turlet in the workday. It's kind of a nice reprieve, you know. You get like 5 to 7 minutes, and you just kind of go hit it, and it's great. But there is, as a guy person, there is a bathroom experience that I am missing out on. And for once. Normally I've got a little bit of FOMO. Like I fear that I'm not going to get to partake or be involved, but I'm here to tell you, on this bathroom experience, I am A-okay with it. I am totally good with not being involved. One of the experiences that I am foreign to as a man is having that monthly visitor of awfulness that is usually met with mood swings and hormone changes and onset bleeding from your nethers. Now, I've got to confess, ladies, I would love if you hear this episode, and I've talked before, I think there are few women that listen to this show, and that's fine. I know my audience. Guys, if you're coming to this episode to learn a thing or two about what goes on, hopefully you do. I sure did. But ladies, if you hear this and you're like, this misguided fool, he but thinks he has begun to grasp the inner workings of the lady downstairs, please, please, I would love to have you on the show to set me straight. Privycast@gmail.com. But one of the experiences foreign to me as a man person is having that monthly period. Now, we are going to say, I should family warning at the front of this episode. Here on Privy, we try to keep it as family friendly as possible. And while I personally do not believe that discussions of the woman's time of month are necessarily not family friendly, I can totally understand how if you have a young listener, you may not want them to be partaking in this episode. And that's totally fine. This is one to skip. If you have a younger listener with you, I would refer you back one episode to our episode on Skibbity Toilet. I'm sure that the young folks will love it. But if it needs be said, in this episode of Privy, there will be discussion of the female anatomy and the female biological process with some description of those parts and processes. So, with that said, we dive into this flow. Oh, gosh. Oh, it's already so awkward. The period. And it should be said that the period, the term period, is a more recent term than the technical term menstruation. Now, menstruation is spelled menstruation. And that's just a little spelling remembrance for you. Nowadays, women have a lot of technology to help deal with this little visitor. And this Friday, at the point of this episode's release, just 3 days from this episode's release, it is International Women's Day. Women, happy International Women's Day. I'm sorry that you have to deal with this, I guess is what I would say. And what better way to remember and celebrate women than me, a guy, talking about the history of feminine hygiene. Heyo, let's go. But before we begin, it serves to describe our, let's be honest, again, primarily male audience. We should probably make some definitions about what is a period. First, it's called a period because it comes from the Greek terms peri, meaning around, and chodos, chodor, meaning the way or path, or around the way or path. Eventually, this term periodos shifted into the Latin periodus, referring to a period or a recurring cycle. And the term was first used in reference to the lady's menstruation cycle in the 1800s. Now that it has been named, what is the period? Menstruation, or in the Latin, the menses, which is interesting because I think menses now it refers to when you are going through, I don't actually know what that is. I'm going to shut up for a second. But it is the recurring shedding of the lining of the uterus in a discharge containing blood, mucus, and part of the uterine wall lining. Wow. Blood, mucus, and uterine wall lining. There's probably someone out there who makes like uncomfortable throw pillows. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you, instead of saying live, laugh, love, it said blood, mucus, and uterine wall lining, you're going to have yourself a slam dunk on awkward throw pillows. But this shedding occurs when the egg attached to the wall of the uterus does not become fertilized via relations and is passed via the period. Now, I did just mansplain a period. And I understand how foolhardy this is. And I also understand that I am speaking from a place of ignorance and limited internet research. I've also should confess, my internet search history is absolutely wild this week. More on that in a moment. But that's my understanding of what's happening during a period. You're getting rid of some portion of this uterine wall lining. My understanding is also this. Having been married to a person who experiences this for almost 10 years, she has been experiencing it for longer than 10 years. I have been married to her for almost 10 years. And that is this. It's not comfortable. And I think that's fair to say. I don't think I have to experience a period to be able to tell you that it doesn't seem comfortable. I'm also on record on the show saying anytime you've got blood coming out of your nethers, you have some very, very big concerns. I understand women, y'all are awesome because you have this happen frequently to semi-frequently. And I'm here to tell you, anytime a man blasts blood, there is deep, deep-seated concern in their heart. There is something gone terribly, terribly wrong. But it goes to reason that as long as women have been getting their monthlies, they've been trying to figure out with ways to deal with the flow. Go with the flow, if you will. And to begin our journey into the history and development of feminine hygiene, we're going to first explore some of the options for absorption that have been used over the years. As is the case with the history of toilet paper and other materials, humans often turn first to the natural world around them to deal with their bodily fluids. The oldest recorded writings of tampon use are from our good old friend, the Ebers Medical Papyrus out of Egypt. And the Ebers Medical Papyrus details women using papyrus tampons. That is, tampons made of like kind of wadded up paper. There are reports of people in Greece using bits of cloth wrapped around a piece of wood. Oh my, oh dear heavens. Just the thought. I don't have this specific crevice on my body, but I do have a crevice. We don't need to discuss my crevices. I'm going to stop saying that word now. But I got to say, the prospect of yoinking a quote-unquote piece of wood, did someone say, just with rags wrapped around it, just seems absolutely backwards. But they seem to time and time again turn to materials that are both absorbent, I would say that's a beneficial trait, but also readily available and comfortable, soft. Like you don't want to just like yink a pine cone. That no, game over, jelly. If you don't know, if you did not know this, modern day tampons are absorbent as woofy. But early women, that is, women of old, turned to absorbent things such as wool, sponge, and animal fur. Native Americans are said to use moss wedged inside of a buffalo skin. And I need to tell you here, not all of these things were being shoved up and into the female anatomy. Many of them were being used as a pad to catch the leakage. Leakage. That's a bad word. You know, people get mad about the word moist, but the word leakage is not great. Like, I would argue leakage is worse than moist, in my opinion. But the optics are not great. I have in my brain, when I hear animal skins, I have in my brain just some freshly shorn sheep and this big bag of wool. And the wife just like takes wool by the fistful and just skbink, just yoinks it right in there. And some of these things make sense. Like we can see how a sponge or even animal fur, like we can see what's going on here. But other materials that would regularly be used include grass, no please, stop it, leaves, please stop it, just, you're going to totally sully the mitt. Like, leaves don't generally stay together well, in my experience, even if they're wet, and I don't know if you would want wet leaves. That seems counterintuitive. As is noted, they would use papyrus and scraps of papyrus. Absolutely wild. Totally unhinged, in my opinion. Ladies, if you hear this, if you're listening, if I haven't lost you already, if me mansplaining a period to you didn't run you straight out of this place, that has to be crazy. Here in Oregon, as Coach Wehrman shared on his episode a few months back, we've begun stocking feminine hygiene products in all bathrooms at schools, and we're stocking the good stuff. Like they're cardboard applicator, I think, but like for all intents and purposes, they are regular standard issue tampons. And I think we could answer this idea by swapping out all or just small pot, all of these tampons, or at least the men's bathroom tampons. Like, listen, I ain't getting into it, but like, let's swap those ones out with little piles of grass freshly cut from the school's lawn. It'd be fine. It'll all work itself out. But there are records as early as the 1000s speaking about the 400s where women would throw their menstrual pads at men to get them to leave them alone. Nothing will chase off a guy you don't want around you like skeeting a bloody pad at their head. But for a long time, it was truly like trial and error to sort out absorbency. And as time went on, towards the medieval period, women discovered that this rad stuff called moss is going to work real well to absorb and be soft. And I imagine it's a fan favorite. When the other options are cowhides and loose grass and leaves, moss was probably a welcomed respite. As you might expect, the discovery of cotton, has done a lot for us. But before we have gotten to the current issues of cotton in these products, we first turn to fabrics and other textiles for some respite from the grass. In the medieval period, as fabrics and textiles continued to develop, these would begin to be used as rags to both put on the zone as kind of a covering and a catcher, but also rags to stuff up and into the zone. In time, it dawned on some to reduce, reuse, and recycle. And now as people have turned to reusable forms of diapers and the like, I'm going to tell you, there was a time when I, uninformed, sparkly-eyed, and bushy-tailed, told my wife that we were going to use reusable diapers because it would, quote, save us so much money. Diapers are expensive, as any parent knows all too well. But here's the deal, friends. There's some things in life. This is Hunter Hoover, Privy Cast, Money 101. There are some things in this life that are worth spending money on if you have the ability to do so. Diapers, good coffee, and if it must be said, good tampons. Once upon a time, women far and wide used rags to absorb their flow. And in many cases, these rags were reused on a general basis. Often they would wrap bits of moss or weeds and grass inside the rag to stuff up in there. Again, not all of these were inserted. Many of them served more as a pad lined with material to be worn under the dress to catch the byproduct. One of the shining developments of the Victorian era is that of chastity belts and other such garments worn by women at the time. These made strides in feminine hygiene as well. One of these developments was a belt that held the pad and their absorbent materials in place so the woman could move about more freely while on her period. While this was a European development, there are writings detailing the use of tampon-type objects held in place by a device called a kama in Japan. That's K-A-M-A. These would be changed up to 12 times throughout the day. In other cultures, it seems the path through the menstruation was to let it ride, baby. It was totally common to see period or to see women with period stains on their undergarments, often just letting it flow. When you're outside and working, let it flow, baby. Like, some of them had what were called period bowls. And they served as kind of like a dish that they would sit over to catch. Now, dear Lord, help us. Here's my only thing with this. If you are a person now or forever, and your path, if you are a female human, and your path forward is the use of a bowl to catch, quote, the period material, here is but one rule. There is but one rule here. You have to have two bowls. You have to. And I know they probably didn't have an abundance of bowls back then. We have a flip jillion bowls today. But if you're going to be catching, I've talked about period blood a lot, and we're only 20 some minutes in here. But if you're catching period blood, like you would catch vomit in a bowl, you gotta have a designated monthly bowl. Like, label that crap. It should be said, there is little data in writing about what women used for catching the fluids, as it was considered by many a topic not to be discussed. It was kind of taboo, let alone written about outside of medical research, and medical research wasn't really high on our priority list for some time. Unlike many other historical artifacts, we don't find many where specific use can be determined because many were discarded, burned, or were thrown away after being used. These rags and the period-stained rags that would result, especially in the time period where women were reusing these, are where we get the term on the rag. Finally, there existed in the early 1900s instructions for how to roll and fold a piece of fabric to serve as a menstrual pad, which could be attached to the waist via cord. And as textiles and other industry developed, there developed with them materials to assist women month to month. No time like the present. We might as well go ahead and get the polar seltzer flowing here. It burns so good. The primary menstrual receptacle being developed at the time was menstrual pads. Pads, if you will. Its development coincides directly with wartime technology, developed to help stop the bleeding of wounded soldiers. Now, some people credit this technology to Benjamin Franklin. Old Windy Ben from last year's 4th of July episode, he found his way back home here on Privy. It is said that Ben Franklin, during the Revolutionary War era, there's not a lot of evidence of this, but that he began using these nursing pads and suggested that they could be used by women as well in stopping and catching blood. However, by the end of the 1800s, menstruation pads became more commercially available. Others believe that these nurses had begun to rely on their nursing cloths and said, well, it's good enough to stop this person's flesh wound. We might as well stop their monthly bleeding. In time, again, these pads became commercially available with the inventions of Thomas and William Southall's sanitary napkin. Now, here's the deal. Number, why'd you have to call it a napkin? When I think of a napkin, I think of me wiping schmutz off my face. Pizza leavings. Chili leavings. Corn dog leavings. Pretty much ice. Oh, ice cream. I have a beard. And the thing about having a beard is ice cream cones are just a no-fly. Like, you're just going to get ice cream all up in your beard. You can't not. And if you figure out how not to, you look absolutely ridiculous trying to eat an ice cream cone. You just have to... My path forward as a beard wearer is you just got to fully commit. You just have to commit to the mess. S'mores, campfire s'mores, you fully commit to a marshmallow beard. It's a marshmallow beard in the summer. That's all there is to it. And you just gotta let it ride. But I'm just saying, like, Thomas and William Southall, they called it a sanitary napkin. Please, can you not? Just stop calling it a napkin. Napkins wipe crumbs off my face. Pads sop up bloody downstairs material. It's different. Dang it. Words mean things. And while the Southalls held the patent, they didn't become readily available until after 1888, when Johnson & Johnson, family company, made disposable Lister's towels. Again, towel, not the exact phrase I'd go for there. These relied on the technology, again, from nurses' cloths to absorb bodily fluids, and often were found using wood pulp, more on that in a little bit, and fabric to catch the material. Wood pulp turns out pretty absorbent. Either way, whether it was a variety of medical practicing nurses stopping blood in the field or Ben Franklin creating pads to stop bleeding in the Revolutionary War, maxi pads have their start tied to times of war and conflict. These pads, often called sanitary napkins, took off. And Kotex...
Yep. There you are, right behind me.
It says absorbs instantly. Kotex released their first advertisement for these wood pulp pads in 1921. It should be noted, early renditions of these maxi pads were more like Band-Aids, which, if you really think about it, isn't that what a pad is? Like, isn't a maxi pad just a lady bandage for your hoo-ha? Like, that's what it is. It is. These sanitary napkins were often advertised with a number of belts to keep them in place prior to the use of adhesive. Now, I must make a confession to you. In doing my research, I made a note in my notes here. I said, I gotta talk about this. Up until this week, when I was doing research for this episode, yes, I had to do research. Sorry. If you would have given me an opportunity to explain to you how a woman fixes a pad to their situation, I would have said that they stick the adhesive on the woman's skin. I thought it stuck to their skin like a Band-Aid sticks on me. Like, I'm stuck on Band-Aid brand, baby, because Band-Aid sticks on me. I thought the pad stuck on them. But I found out that you actually adhese it to the undergarment. So that's fun. It's kind of like a reverse bandage. The 1980s brought adhesive to these maxi pads. From there, progress was made to increase absorbency, better fit for different undergarments. But this little tangent has only explored pads. And as we all well know, there's a lot of different options for women these days. The next, probably most primarily feminine hygiene product is that of the tampon. The term tampon, it seems first to have been used in 1860 by R.G. Main, who referred to it as an alternative term for a vaginal plug. Dear Jesus, help my Christian soul. But there was a time when they tried to stop the period by just plugging it up. Pap that cork right up in there. Now, this led to a number of complications. And if it needs be said, hi, I'm Hunter. I'm not a doctor. I cannot stress I am not a medical professional in any sort. I'm barely a professional of anything. But I'm here to tell you, don't plug any of your holes. Butthole, pee-pee hole, lady part hole, nostril hole, ear hole. Don't plug them. They are meant to be open. Both for intake, not down there usually. Well, never mind. And output, primarily, peep poop, and in women's case, for our episode this week, their period. So if it needs to be said, don't plug yourself. And that was essentially the extent of a tampon for centuries. It was a plug with some level of absorbency attached to it. As the story goes, a gentleman named Earl Haas, a physician in the early 1900s, developed a new and more familiar device at the inspiration of his friend, who reported to have controlled her period by shoving a sponge in her cavity. Now, as the story goes, Earl took a trip to California, visited his friend. His friend, apparently they were on the topic of having their period. And they said, oh yeah, I just grab a little SpongeBob SquarePants and just skeet him right on up in there. But I gotta say, this probably worked pretty well. Like, it's a sponge. Sponge is fine. Until you move about and it squishes the blood, and it's gonna squish the blood out. Like, that's what sponges do. But there was a very clear problem. Inserting and removing the sponge meant touching Bloody Marys of a whole new degree. Haas, at this inspiration, decided to develop a device to insert the cotton, quote, plug into the vagina via cardboard applicators, resulting in no-touch technology and a much more sanitary experience. Remember, when we're dealing with body blood, we don't want a lot of sanitation contamination situations. Haas was granted a patent for his device in 1933 called the catamenial device. It would turn out, though, that Earl Haas, not that much of a salesman, because he was unable to sell the device to companies. Johnson & Johnson turned him down. It would seem that they were still on the Lister's towels from a couple years back, and that this new invention, if they put their money there, they would have to split their revenue in between two competing products. Haas finally sold the patent and device and the name to Gertrude Tendridge for about $35,000. Now, this is a long time ago. This would have been a stack of cash today, too. Gertrude Tendridge was a German immigrant who, with the newly purchased patent rights and business name, worked out of her home to start a company for tampons with applicators. And in true Women's Day fashion, we got to talk about Gertrude Tendridge. Because Gertrude Tendridge took a device invented by a man, sold it in a way that only a woman could. She hired female salespeople, female production people, asked female nurses to speak about the product to people. Because here is the gospel truth of sales. No one can sell a product quite like the people who love it. The biggest proponents for something are the people who directly benefit from it. And Gertrude knew that. And she put women to the test, or to the task. She paid for females in advertising to promote the product. And as she did so, her company, Tampax, started to grow. Hey, look, Tampax is back here with me too. Hey, Tampax. Huh. Jumbo. But early on, there was pushback in the area of tampon use. Some believed them to be unsafe, often citing the unsafe practices of early tampons and the hemorrhaging and other complications that they caused. In 1945, Tampax, the company, began to do research and working with medical agencies to study the effects of tampons. Tampax, here's the thing. Tampax doesn't just make feminine hygiene products. They do the work to figure out how to make their feminine hygiene better. And what they found over the course of about 20 years was there's little to no adverse effects from the use of tampons. A competitor entered the market in the 1940s. Judith Esser-Mittag, a German gynecologist, you know she knows what's going on down there, developed applicatorless tampons in 1940. She sold this idea to the Johnson & Johnson family company in the 1970s. And again, up to this time, these tampons, when they are produced, they are still using some amounts of wood pulp. Unfortunately, wood pulp isn't the most appealing. And I can imagine if you saw wood pulp, you would not think, you know what? I think I'm going to stuff that up inside of me. But they said we can make it appealing by introducing chlorine bleach. But even more unfortunately, it turns out when you bleach wood pulp, it gives off a carcinogen when reacting with the wood pulp. While the levels that these toxic chemicals, they went to trial, and while the levels were deemed harmless, it was also pointed out that no amount of carcinogens should be permitted to be stuffed up inside of you. Couple this with fear, many companies began to switch to non-chlorine or bleach methods of getting their materials produced. In these United States, this led to the Tampon Safety and Research Act in 1997 in an attempt to create greater transparency between tampon manufacturers and companies and the consumer who will be buying and presumably using this product. This bill continues to mandate for the support of research in the extent to additives in female hygiene products and whether those new additives pose any risk to the health of women or the children of women who use those products during and before pregnancies. Wild thought there. This bill is continually renewed and is yet to be passed, and it was most recently introduced in 2019. Other than this, tampons have also been the center of societal justice issues related to free access to necessary products. These calls to end taxes on needed and necessary hygiene products are called tampon taxes, and they've been called to be put a stop to. And I believe it is of this measure and of this nature that has led to us here in the state of Oregon stocking tampons in all bathrooms. Much like much of the fibers in a tampon today are a combination of rayon and cotton and are considered safe in most cases when changed appropriately and at the right time. Turns out if you don't change it, you can get like blood poisoning. Isn't that fun? It should be noted, outside of pads and tampons, there are other options to feminine hygiene products. And I'm going to admit, I have to bat to my ignorance here, because you could have asked me a bajillion times and I'd have said, that's all there is to it. pad, plug, or let it ride. Those are your options. But one other option is a device called the menstrual cup. Now, oh geez, this thing. First of all, why does it have to be somewhat wiener shaped? Like, pray tell, why must it be somewhat wiener shaped? But this thing is like a little rubber cup that you just yoink up your zone. Not my zone. I don't have a zone for yoinking. But like, that gets yoinked up the zone to collect the blood. Big yuck on that. You just get a cup full of period blood. And I also feel like this thing's going to spill. Like, how do you keep... What if you lay down? God forbid. Like, how the heck does that work? So you install your cup, and then, oh, whoops, I went prone, and now I've got cup slosh going all over the place down here. No thanks, friend. One wrong turn, and you're going to dump the whole cup. Similar to this, and seemingly to hold less fluid, is the menstrual disc. It's the same idea. This seems to just, like, catch and pool it, and then I'm getting wonky feeling, but I think like as the menstrual disc fills, maybe like you find yourself over a toilet or maybe one of those sweet period bowls that we talked about earlier, and then you like pull it out, yuck, and then it just like flow into the toilet from there. Dear God, help us all. These seem weird and bad to me. I don't know if I want to know, like, how widely used these are. I think it's like people being circumcised. Bear with me, friends. There are people that walk around in our world that are not circumcised, full Philistines downstairs, and you just don't know. Like, you don't know what you don't know. And they could be walking amongst us right now. And same can be said for users of the menstrual cup and the menstrual disc. They could just be walking amongst us. And I think the way to test this is to say, lie down immediately. And if they're afraid to do that, they're probably one of these people. But there's a lot going on here. And these last two, the cup and the disc, seem to have arisen out of a desire to reduce waste. Tampons create waste. They're tough on sewers. The plastics clog things up and they go into landfills, etc., etc. I think that's why we've got cardboard applicators. Yeehaw! But one more thing that is foreign to me in this world of feminine hygiene and the things that go on here is the little silly little trash cans next to the toilet. Now, for years, I didn't know what this was about. I didn't know what was going on here. But these are used to dispose of tampons and other feminine hygiene waste before it is flushed. Because, friends, you're not supposed to flush some of these things. Much of this material is not supposed to be flushed. It will swell up and clog your pipes. And they have created these tiny little trashes in these areas to stop women from flushing it all down. Quit flushing your tampons, ladies. Stop that. Don't flush your pads. I'm pretty sure you don't flush menstrual cups or discs. Just don't flush it. Throw it in the trash. It's fine. Take your trash out more often. It's fine. Just do that. We learned a lot today here on Privy. We grew as people. I grew as a human male person. I learned a lot. Ladies, happy Women's Day, International Women's Day. I'm sorry that you have to deal with these things. It seems like a lot of effort and generally an awful experience. So hats off to you for, I guess, putting up with it. But this brings us to the end of another episode of Privy. Thank you so much for being here. If you stayed here and listened to me talk about feminine hygiene for the last 45 minutes, you're a real champion. We love you. And we would love it if now you we could shill you for a rating and review. Open up that I Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or you can go to the Podbean app and like the episode too. But leave us a rating or review. The 5-star options are preferred. And what that does is, number one, primarily, it helps other people find the show. The more ratings it gets, the more it'll kind of bump up in the categories that this podcast is hooked to. So the more, go do that. As a thank you for doing that, we at Privy will be donating $1 to the Wounded Warriors Project and to Living Water International as a way of saying thank you for leaving us a rating and review. The 5-star options are preferred. And that's just a reminder that we should keep pooping in the free world, but that free world was not always free, and we need to work towards some cleaner water for all. So go do that. Thank you for doing so. For those who have left ratings and review, leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read that here, and those written reviews will bump it up a couple bucks for those. Those are super great. We love to hear from you. Send us an email, privycast@gmail.com. We'd love to read those emails here. If you want to be a part of this show, hit us up, privycast@gmail.com. Let me know. Do you have a story? Do you want to set me straight on feminine hygiene? What have you? We would love for you to do that. Follow us on social media. We're at PrivyCast. I'm at Owlet7 on all social media. Go check us out there. Thanks to Kevin and Poddington for the use of their music this week. Thanks to women for being women and putting up with my nonsense as I mansplained periods and feminine hygiene. This has been another episode of Privy. Keep pooping in the free world. Breathe more, push less, and now, as always, don't forget to flush.